There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bachelor with Malcolm Hohnlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. We welcome Seth Franzman, Senior Middle East Correspondent in Middle East Affairs for the Jerusalem Post. We go right to the Iran-Azerbaijan border. Reports in these last days of Iran staging military exercises, intimidating scale. At the same time, Azerbaijan, across the border, is looking at Iran asking why now the successful conclusion of the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict last year with Russian peacekeepers, with Turkey and Azerbaijan and Russia all cooperating in the region for peace settling in Nagorno-Karabakh as it has not been for decades. And now, Seth, a very good evening to you. What is Iran's intention, this gathering of its armor and its military on the borderline? Good evening, Seth.
Hi, good evening. Well, I think that Iran has been accusing Azerbaijan in recent weeks of hosting, you know, Israelis, or implying that Azerbaijan somehow is not just, you know, working with Israel or buying Israeli equipment like drones and things, but that Azerbaijan actually somehow hosts, you know, an actual Israeli, or what they call a Zionist presence. And Iran, I think, would like to send a message basically to Baku, to Azerbaijan, that it doesn't want Azerbaijan obviously used for any sort of Israeli activity. And, you know, that may be also a reaction to the New York Times article not so long ago that talked about how claims that, you know, the Fakhrizadeh, who was the Iranian nuclear chief scientist, was killed with a remote controlled weapon. And the assumption or the accusation by Iran, of course, is that that is Israel, and that what they refer to as Israeli or Zionist terrorism. So I think part of the saber rattling is to send a message to Azerbaijan. They don't want the Israelis there. But of course, as you said, Azerbaijan came out of this war with the Armenians, Armenian community there in Nagorno-Karabakh, victorious. And so I think Iran would like to kind of send another message that no, Azerbaijan and Turkey shouldn't get any more ideas. They're not going to get any more territory along the border there. And Iran cares deeply about having a road that can run directly from Iran to Russia. And so it doesn't want to have that blocked.
Malcolm?
Do you see the activities of the new Iranian foreign minister with his full-court press going to China, Russia, Lebanon, elsewhere? What do you see the agenda, and to what degree are the developments in Iraq and Syria affecting Iran's future role?
Well, I think if we look at the Iranian foreign minister, it's interesting here is he's not someone who's a household name. In fact, I don't even know his name, really, to be honest, but I can look up the article I just wrote about him, and in which I used his name a dozen times. So what I think is interesting about him is he's not Javad Zarif. He's not a kind of playboy running around Western capitals, going to think tanks and hanging out with Western diplomats and eating at fancy restaurants. I think that he is a very serious man, and I think he's been tasked by Iran to shift Iran's policies to the east, and that means, you know, more towards China, more towards Russia, you know, away from kind of, you know, talking to the West and begging the West for some sort of deal. So I think that it illustrates a shift in where Iran thinks its core interests are. And that means that Iran cares probably a bit more about Central Asia and Russia and the Caucasus, and a bit less about trying to dazzle the Americans with stories of moderates and all this kind of nonsense that Iran used to tell the West, you know, like, oh, Iran is a moderate country. I think Iran is saying, no, we're not moderate. It's fine. We just don't care about that pretense anymore. I think that's part of it. I mean, you mentioned Syria and Iraq. I mean, Iran obviously is looking very closely at the Iraq elections this week. There were elections in Iraq, and it's interesting. Iran is basically saying that the elections were stolen and that the voting machines, the biometrics, were hacked by a team of American UAE hackers somehow, and that the votes were changed to reduce the number of turnout for pro-Iranian parties. So Iran is trying to rush a team of IRGC members to Iraq to try to strong arm, I think, a government there. And in Syria, we know what they're doing, which is that they're trying to, you know, continue to move weapons to Hezbollah. And we've seen, I think, just in the last week, two reports of airstrikes that, of course, they were Israeli strikes.
Seth, you are the author of the new book, Drone Wars Pioneers, Killing Machines, Artificial Intelligence, and Battle for the Future, published in the U.S. now. And I look forward to a lengthy conversation with you. But the question is Iran proliferating drones, killer drones, surveillance drones? Is this a new source of power for them in the shadowy world of troublemakers?
100%, and I have a whole chapter or two in the book about this. I think that people need to understand that when we talk about drones, I think it's something a lot of people thought, oh, I know about drones. I've heard about the Predator drone programs killing terrorists, or I've seen these little quadcopters that people buy, you know, these Chinese-made DJI drones that you use to photograph weddings or just bother your friends. No, when we talk about drones today, we need to think a lot about Iran and China, and Iran is a very interesting story. Iran was building drones even in the 80s because after the revolution, Iran didn't have – it had a lot of American, former American airplanes there that the Shah's regime had used, but Iran didn't have enough pilots. And so Iran was pioneering drones to use surveillance. Now Iran is in its third generation or so of these drones and fourth generation. And these are very dangerous machines because Iran is exporting them all over the region to the Houthis in Yemen, to Hezbollah, to Hamas, to Iraq. And it has used the drones to attack ships in the Gulf of Oman, that Iran targeting commercial ships that Iran says are linked to Israel. It's killed people there. It's used drones from Syria to fly them into Israeli airspace. And Hamas has used Iranian-style drones in the last conflict. Now, these drones have so far, of course, not caused any casualties in Israel, but they are being used against American forces in Iraq. And this is a very serious threat, and people need to understand it, that we talk about the nuclear threat, and of course that's important as well, but Iran likes to use things like missiles and drones because when you fire a missile or you shoot a drone at someone, it's not always easy to figure out where it came from. And that is a way that Iran is able to conduct war without admitting that it's actually going to war.
Malcolm?
We remember the attack on Saudi Arabia where they used new drones and missiles. And the is this a reflection of the fact of two things, actually? One, that the Air Force of Iran is so decrepit that they need these alternative means until they're able to upgrade, and if they ever get the money from the U.S., et cetera, to buy new planes and fix up the ones they have. And does the base at Kashan, is that really from where they are servicing all of these drone efforts and proliferating around the region?
Well, I think in terms of the Air Force thing, yeah. I mean, Iran never had or has a very powerful conventional, you know, army or navy. I mean, Iran is actually not known for being a country that has, you know, masses of armored columns or lots of real planes or ships. It's almost a semi-failed state in that regard. What Iran excels at is using these kind of IRGC, you know, terrorist religious militias all over the region. So the drones are part of that program. That's the point. If you're Iran, you don't need to give an old F-16 to one of your allies in Yemen. Why would you do that? That plane would be tracked down and destroyed very quickly. You use the drones. So that's right. The drones are very important. Now, Israel has revealed this base you mentioned, Kashan. I think what we don't know in the sense of, look, that is one area that Israel, I think, has identified. But I think that there's no doubt Iran is actually training some of the operators there. But the actual equipment is being moved to places like Iraq. And what Iran excels at is teaching locals how to build the machines. The thing about a drone is, you know, it's parts of it are not that sophisticated. You can build it. What's sophisticated is, you know, the gyroscopes and things in terms of helping it get where you want, what you want to destroy. So that's what Iran looks to be doing, I think.
Seth, back to the Iranian-Azerbaijan border. Does Iran have another move after this deployment of a large amount of forces? Is there a plan B if Azerbaijan is not intimidated?
No, Iran and Azerbaijan are not going to have a conflict. I mean, I think the reality is we have to understand what's really going on, which is that Iran just wanted to show off and, you know, get a bit of pride back. And I think then you saw some conciliatory comments from Baku and Azerbaijan. I mean, in the end of the day, you know, Iran shares interests in many ways with Azerbaijan and Turkey and Russia and in terms of certain files. I think there's things they don't get along on, of course. But I don't think any of these countries want a really serious conflict. And I think that's why what we see these countries doing, Iran likes to do proxy conflicts. It likes to have militias and things. But I don't think – I just think Iran wanted to show off a bit. I think that they also rolled out a new air defense system this week, which is some sort of a Iron Dome style system that they've built. So it's, you know, Iran likes to show off and tell its people, yeah, see how strong we are. Iran doesn't, as I said, it doesn't have a very strong army. And I don't think Iran, when's the last time it waged a real war? I mean, I think in the 80s against Iraq.
Seth Frantzman is senior Middle East correspondent, Middle East affairs analyst at the Jerusalem Post. Importantly, he's the author of the new book, Drone Wars Pioneers, Killing Machines, Artificial Intelligence, and the Battle for the Future. Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. This is CBSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.